You're recording.
Okay. It is 8:36. We're going to call this meeting to order. It is Wednesday, February 15th. Please turn off or mute all of your electronic devices. Note that we have Mark Harris here from the Attorney General's Office. Dr. James, if you want to do the roll call for us.
Dr. Byrne? Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost? Dr. James is here. Mr. Lohi?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
Dr. Ray?
Here.
We have quorum. So Dr. Byrne and Ms. Frost are missing, absent.
Okay, so we're going to start with our initial investigative reviews. Number 14, 2314, Christopher Monarski, DVM. And Tracy, if you would read the summary for us.
Sure. Case 2314, the complainant is Ilona Jorgensen, and the respondent is Christopher Monarski, DVM. On December 23rd, 2021, IPA 12+0 male shepherd mix was presented to Dr. Elenius on referral for a surgical consult for an abdominal mass. Due to COVID protocols, Dr. Elenius spoke with complainant over the phone to discuss differentials, diagnostics, hospitalization, surgery, and possible complications. An estimate was provided, which complainant approved and left a deposit. Diagnostics were performed, and a blood transfusion was started. The following day, the dog was transferred to the surgery department. Dr. Stewart evaluated the dog, reviewed the estimate, and contacted complainant to discuss the case. She went over her concerns and risk factors of surgery, including the location of the mass near critical structures. Complainant agreed to move forward with the surgery. The dog remained hospitalized for supportive care and was discharged on December 29, 2021. On January 1st, 2022, the dog was humanely euthanized. Complainant believes she was taken advantage of. She was not explained the gravity of the surgery, therefore she was not able to make an informed decision. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to dismiss this issue with no violation. And the motion was approved with a vote of 4-0. This case, it had two other cases which were just dealt with, and this case was pended to obtain additional information regarding the medical record keeping issues, and if they were actually provided to the complainant timely.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. So we do have both the complainant and the respondent here. I'd first like to ask Dr. Monarski if you'd like to come forward. I can give you up to 5 minutes to speak. Just keep in mind, we've received all the information that you have submitted.
Yes, I'm Dr. Chris Monarski. I'm the medical director at VCA. I'm a referral center. As far as the record getting to the respondent, I had received a request from Tracy to send that medical record, and I forwarded that to my hospital administrator. Unfortunately, I do not have any proof that that got done, other than my request. It was then, again, Tracy had reached out to me. I then, again, forwarded that to my hospital director with a little bit more stern situation, in which then the record was transmitted. We did send that via FedEx to the client.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
What were these dates? Do you have the actual dates of when the email came
yes.
to you that you forwarded, when the second email came in? Like,
yeah, I believe it was December 6th. Tracy had requested that record. On December 7th, I had texted with my administrator, in which I did receive a response, so I assumed that that had been taken care of. And then I believe the other one was January 16th, in which the record was then FedEx on the 17th to the client.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks. You may step back. Ms. Jorgensen, if you'd like to come forward. And I can also give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for hearing the case this morning. Just to correct what Dr. Minarski just disclosed to you, Lucky was euthanized on January 1st of 2022. I requested records, or tried to request records, in March or April of that year. December 6th was the first hearing here, 2022. That's when I spoke to Tracy, and Tracy said, I said, I still haven't gotten these records. I mean, after all is said and done, it's been almost a year. She said, don't worry. She did her due diligence. She contacted the facility and whomever, you know, the powers to be, and requested that I get the medical record, which I've been requesting for nigh on 7-8 months. And that, you know, was never sent. He claims that, you know, he sent it to somebody and they dropped the ball on him, and, you know, that's it. Okay, well, it's Mars Wrigley that owns his company. That's a big, giant conglomeration. And here I am, just a little senior citizen, trying to do my due diligence. The last hearing we had was January 16th, I believe. I still had no record, and that's when you all followed through and said, hey, wait a minute, that's not right. She's entitled to a record of her dog's care. And one of the gentlemen asked me, I believe he was sitting over there, and he said, in the other room, and he said, oh, well, did you get a treatment plan? Well, yeah, that's all I received was the treatment plan. I never received the records. When I first got in touch with Tracy, which was in March or April, or maybe even later than that, I don't know, but she was the one that told me to call Dr. Minarski and request the record, which I did in earnest. I tried to reach out to Ms. Vasquez, that's the, you know, whatever her position is at the VCA, Kathleen Vasquez. I even went down there and begged to see somebody. I mean, I just don't understand how many times. This is what I received in the mail. It is dated January 18th, 2 days after the hearing. So in other words, my question to you all is, why does it take two hearings for me to get what I was clearly entitled to months after the fact? Well, more than a year now, because Lucky passed last year, January 1. I just did not like the way I was treated down there. It's a major, like I said, major corporation. I have documents that I went to Phoenix Veterinary. They saw me. I was in their office. They treated Lucky. There were no, you know, there was mask protocol, when you say COVID protocol. The COVID protocol that was instituted by the VCA was because their company is owned by a California, you know, entity, and they were following California protocols. Why are they entitled to operate? And that's a big, huge corporation in this state. Am I wrong? I mean, VCA is big, right? Why are they allowed to operate in the state of Arizona and not follow Arizona law? We had all pretty much, by December of 2022, put away the masks, or, you know, the masks were optional, let's put it that way. And the other main thing was the fact that I had the surgery. We were at the VCA Thursday, the 23rd. The surgery was the 24th, which was Christmas Eve. I went to see him on Monday. I have pictures of him on my phone. He was just so ill. I asked, well, I thought, if this is the end, I understand. If this is the end for him, why can't he be released and come home to me? They kept him 2 more days. Meanwhile, everything's rolling, increasing the estimate far more than what I was ever privy to on the 23rd. Thank you for listening. I just hope that in the future, big companies can't take advantage of little senior citizens. Thank you for your time.
Ma'am. Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question of the claim?
Thank you for entitling me. Thank you.
Sure. Do you recall approximately or exactly when you made your first request for records? And what method? Was it by phone, by email, in person?
Tracy, may I ask Tracy, because Tracy would have the exact, or maybe I have the dates because I filled out this. And my last visit, I had said, I didn't even know how to contact you folks. It was, here's the complaint investigation form. What's this dated? And of course, there's probably no date on it. I reached out to Tracy and spoke to her, and these were filed 8/21 of 2022. So I'm gonna say more than likely, I requested records shortly after he was euthanized. I went to the, maybe 6 weeks after, so what would that be? That would be in February, an exact date. Let's just say March the 1st, I was requesting records.
Was it in person, over the phone, or?
It was in person. That's when I went to talk to Kathleen Vasquez. And I was told that she was, first I was told she was not in the office, then I was told she was in the office, but she wasn't gonna see me. And then I was told, oh, she's on vacation, she'll be back in a week, she'll call you. I was physically present in the veterinary hospital. And at that time, there was absolutely no COVID protocol at all.
Okay.
Then when I contacted Tracy, Tracy was the one, well, have you spoken to Dr. Minarski? No, because I didn't know that he was even involved in this thing.
Okay.
And that's how we ended up here. Thank you very much.
So Dr. Janes, you are the lead on this case?
Yeah, so, I mean, this case was specifically what we were looking at here was the medical records issue, because this doctor was obviously not actively involved in the case medically. And I certainly have concerns with the length of time and the number of requests that were made to get medical records. What is very unclear, and it's probably from the amount of time that has lapsed from when this started to now, as to exactly who were these asked to, what were the dates, why did we not get them, what was the follow-up like? Like, I feel like we just don't have that level of information. I have no reason to believe that an owner wouldn't be requesting medical records if, one, she was concerned about the care and the dog was euthanized in January of last year, and she was filing a complaint in August of that year, that somewhere in there these records had been requested. I don't doubt that at all. But I have no way of knowing who that was to or what transpired. But ultimately, I don't think she got the records. So I think it's a violation of not getting the records. And because we don't really know who that went to, if it had gone to the doctor that saw the case, then we probably would put that violation against the doctor that saw the case. But we don't even know who this went to. So does that now fall to the responsible vet for the practice to not get the medical records to a client?
Doesn't it usually though? I mean, even if there was a veterinarian that worked at a vet clinic, it's the overseeing veterinarian that kind of oversees the administrative stuff, right? So I mean, we can't as individual vets control what happens on the administrative level. That's a management issue. So it's usually the premise holders.
I think we've done it both ways, because we've had cases where the doctor hadn't written.
Well, I mean, that's a separate.
Right, so they couldn't give them in 10 days. And then we've had cases where the practice failed, right? And even the doctor that saw the case may not have even known they were being requested, right?
Exactly.
So that's where I feel like it is kind of more the responsible vet. Before I make a motion on that, and Tracy might have to help me find that because I don't know the exact number. But before I make a motion on that, are there any questions that we would need to understand the process better of how this works at the clinic before we want to vote on it? Because then we'd have to move it to an informal. I mean, well, I think the process is broken and didn't happen.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And regardless of what that process looked like back in March, August, whenever the original ask was made, supposedly, we know that an ask was made in December. We know that the medical director asked staff to do it in December. We have proof of that, but it didn't happen. So then we have a whole month moving forward. So we know that there's more than 10 days from when that original ask of the staff was made and when the medical records were sent.
And this is, so the next question, Tracy, is specific to being an emergency hospital. The rule is different, correct?
Yes.
It's not the 10 days.
Right, on 32274, on page 30, well, this is the time of the incident, page 36 in the green, it's number A10. Failure of an emergency or 24-hour facilities to give copies of medical records to the owner or the owner's agent on release of an animal.
And then I guess the next question is, this was presented to Phoenix Veterinary Referral, not necessarily, it is an emergency center. Would that apply, or is the referral side of this operation under the 10-day rule?
That I don't know.
Either or, we're more than a day, we're more than 10.
Right. I'm just trying to figure out which rule it is. They're different.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would look at it more as on the referral side because it was there for surgery and inpatient care, but either way.
Yeah, they're not really licensed separately though, it's only licensed as one facility. Mm-hmm. So what's on the license? There's not an emergency license, it's just mobile and all that, right? Victoria, sorry.
I'm sorry.
So there's not an emergency license, it's just mobile and mobile unit, mobile clinic.
There's just one license.
Yeah, it's just that, okay. So.
But if the patient comes in for a referral consult, which it sounds like was the case here, it's not necessarily coming in on emergency,
but,
which I think the whole point of the records being provided for an emergency is so that they can go back to their regular vet and have the records, right? So in this case, I don't think that's what was really happening. I think it was more of a referral.
I agree, but the law, I mean, the statute specifically says failure of emergency or 24-hour facility, so it was a facility that was emergency or 24-hour. It's like, what's the differentiation? That's a hard.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's written well there.
Absolutely. Otherwise, every case that came in, went out, have to have records immediately, and we know that doesn't happen.
Or if you close from 11:59 to 12 o'clock, does that exempt you?
All right. The idea is, so in emergency, the records are available for follow-up care, which they need to be immediately.
Right.
I think, I mean, it's a poorly written one, but I think either could apply.
All right.
Your choice.
Now I've lost the, what is the 10-day, where's the 10-day one?
It's under rules.
And that was the yellow, right?
Yeah.
On yellow, on yellow.
Yeah, it's R311-501-8, yeah, thank you.
Eight. On page 17.
And that would have to be referred back to
12, right?
Would it be 12 or 18?
18 is medical record.
No, 18 is...
Violation of statute or rule.
So I'm going to make the motion that we use this R311-501-8 as it relates to 32, 2232, number 18, for failure to ensure that the owner of this animal was provided medical records within 10 days of request.
Okay, a motion, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you for being here.
So are we going to do a consent decree now?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, we should.
Do a roll call for violation.
Do we want to do a roll call?
Well, yeah.
As we vote on it, or after I make the consent agreement altogether?
Yeah, because we're going to have to adopt the findings of facts as referenced in the investigative report, then your conclusions of law, and then your...
So I will make a motion that we approve the findings of fact as written in the investigative materials, and the conclusions of law are the previously mentioned violation of 32, 2232, number 8, for medical records. Oh, I said that wrong. R311-501-1, number 8, for medical records.
Well, I was just going to say, if that's the violation, perhaps we can have a second for that, vote on that.
Well, we voted on that one already.
With the findings of facts?
No, I did the findings of fact in this one.
Yeah, so however you want to do, we just need to approve the findings of facts.
Okay, so then I'll just make a motion to approve the findings of fact as written in the investigative committee materials.
Second.
Okay, motion and a second. Roll call then.
Thanks.
Can I ask a question, Mark? Ask a question. So the findings of fact from the investigative committee, you talked about more along the lines of the case and the care of the pet. I don't believe that there was any discussion on the asking of the medical records and those not... So being that the violation is on medical records and that's not part of what the IC was talking, like this, I'm just wondering, do you have, how does that work?
Does that fall into the conclusions of law?
Pardon? No, I think that's a good point. I think what we're going to need to do is memorialize the concerns that the board has expressed over the, you know, the production of the records versus...
As part of the findings of fact?
Yes.
Okay. So let's amend that motion before we vote on it, that we approve the findings of fact as written from the investigative materials, but add to that that there was concern regarding the multiple requests for medical records that ultimately had not been provided and took almost a year for the owner to receive. And it required multiple requests of multiple different people. So we add that to the findings of fact.
Yeah. Did you want to include all those other facts in the order, the consent agreement, or do you just want to limit the findings of fact as to the conduct related to the production of records?
Yeah, probably.
I feel like these findings of fact are still legit. He just wasn't involved in them. So whether we take them out or not, I don't really care one way or the other, because he was not, from my knowledge, involved in any of these findings of fact.
To...
Yeah, I would take him.
Take
okay.
Him. I would strike everything else.
Yeah, I would just limit the findings of fact then to the facts surrounding the production of records, and that mirrors then the conclusions of law.
Okay, so start all over. We will not even look at the findings of fact that we have on this case because they didn't apply to this doctor, and we will create a new findings of fact regarding the fact that the owner had requested the medical records multiple times over the course of the year and ultimately did not get the medical records until the case was filed with the board and the board requested the medical records be sent.
Second.
Okay. Motion and a second. Any further discussion on that? Clarification? Okay, roll call.
Dr. Byrne? Oh, wait, you're not. Ms. Krieger? Oh, she's. Oh, you're here.
I'm here.
I'm like, I'm looking at Ms. Frost and I'm like, oh my God, the first three people aren't here, but you are. Okay. Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Aye is Dr. James. Mr. Loheed?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. All right, so then we have our findings of fact. So now, do we want to redo the motion that we already all voted on as the conclusions of law?
Was that a voice vote or a roll call?
It was a voice vote.
Which of the.
So we will find in our conclusions of law a violation of R311-5011 number 8, failure to provide medical records as it relates to R322232 number 18.
Second motion. Second. There's no further discussion. Roll call again.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Loheed?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
And now, Dr. James, we may want to pause and see if there's any comments.
There was one letter of concern in 2015, and it was regarding that for not ensuring the correct amount of medication was administered to the patient.
So typically when we, so in this case, I would offer a consent agreement. I would like to do one, but typically the requirements are CE. And in this case, I feel like it's more retraining of the staff on the rules and regulations around medical records and their responsibility to provide these records. So, and I don't recall us ever doing this specifically before, but can that be one of the items in the consent agreement, is that the staff at this hospital is retrained on that issue?
I would think so. I think you could put anything in the consent agreement.
Oh, anything I want?
It does have to relate to the record, right. The violation.
Right, so it would, so my, in the consent agreement, I would require that this clinic, that this doctor make sure that the clinic go through a retraining specifically with regards to medical records and their responsibility with regards to keeping and sending medical records to clients when requested. And each hospital has a different process for that. So some require the doctor to sign off, some don't, some are like, so I feel like it, the clinic needs to own what their process is. What I would want to be asking in the consent agreement is that that process is documented and that the staff is retrained on it.
Is there amount of hours or any information that you want to be sent in to support that?
Maybe sent in to support it, just a narrative or documentation of what was covered in the class and that who attended and the date that it was done. I don't necessarily know that it has to be a specific 1 hour class, but I think it needs to happen.
Can you put in at least a minimum though?
A minimum time?
Yeah.
I guess I would say a minimum would be an hour. And that the process for how they do this at the clinic is also submitted to us so that we know that they have a developed process. They might already have it, but, and then they just have to retrain on it in that hour. But if they don't have it, they're gonna have to develop that process and train on it and get us the process. That's part of the documentation.
Is that a year probation?
Yes, 1 year. And I don't think no civil penalty.
So we're basically wanting them to teach the rest of the hospital, right? The rest of the staff. Mm-hmm. Can we do that? Because we're basically forcing them to spend money as a corporation to train all these people. I mean, do we have the statutory authority to make them train non-licensed people? I'm a little
Well, they have to make sure that they're getting this done.
Or you come back here again.
Yeah.
One or the other.
Well, you do, but I just don't know, can we actually do that? Can we say you need to, I mean, we're limited to $1,000 for each instance. Now we're going to make them pay for hourly wages for all this kind of stuff. I mean, I understand where it's going, but can we statutorily do that is my question. I just want to make sure we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Don't we have expectations of people having adequately trained staff? I mean, that is the overriding expectation of and what the board does. So.
Licensed. But I'm just asking an actual legal question. Do
but
we have statutory authority?
Your BAs aren't licensed, but there's still an expectation that you have trained staff.
But we don't have an actual statutory requirement of what you have to spend on that kind of stuff. And if we're going to force a business to spend a certain amount of money to train all the staff,
but we're not.
He can decline the consent agreement.
This is a legal question. Do we have statutory authority? This is not a debate question.
I think it's an appropriate term of probation if the board thinks that it's a, you know.
I just want to make sure.
Relevant.
Okay.
So that's my offer of a consent agreement.
Okay.
And if not signed, invite for an informal.
If not signed within 30 days, we'll move to an informal.
Second. Okay. Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Okay. Roll call.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Loewe?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Ray?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. All right, finish with that one. So now we're moving on to number 11, 2327, regards to Rose Ann Fiskett, BMD. Tracy, if you could read the case summary for us.
Case 2327, the complainant is Zay Kalu. The respondent is Rose Ann Fiskett, BMD. On September 5th, 2022, Rocky, an 11-year-old male Maltese, was presented to respondent for an anesthesia-free dental cleaning. The dog was examined and deemed healthy for the procedure. During the dental cleaning, the dog collapsed and died. CPR was unsuccessful. The dog was taken to vet med, where CPR was continued. The dog passed away. The dog had a history of a heart murmur and cough, and due to the jugular distension and fluid coming from the dog's lungs, congestive heart failure and ruptured tendon A cord A was suspected for the unexpected death. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 322232, number 11, gross negligence, for proceeding with a veterinary medical procedure in an excited dog with an elevated heart rate and an owner reported heart murmur, which resulted in the death of the dog. ARS 3222312, as it relates to R311511, for failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures, for not relaying the potential risks of the procedure to the pet owner based on the dog's condition, elevated heart rate, and reported heart murmur. ARS 3222232, number 20, performing veterinary services without adequate equipment. No equipment was available while providing veterinary services when an emergency occurred to assist in resuscitation efforts. And ARS 322232, number 22, medical competence, lacking sufficient skill or medical knowledge to allow the patient to settle down due to the elevated heart rate and reassess prior to performing the dental procedure, especially in the light of the owner-reported heart murmur. Additionally, respondent was lacking equipment, supplies, and/or medication to properly perform a procedure in the event of an emergency to adequately perform CPR. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. We have the complainant here as well as Mr. Stoll. Are you speaking?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, come on forward. You have 5 minutes to speak.
Thank you. As some of you know, I've been appearing before this board for over 25 years. And have attended literally hundreds and hundreds of investigative committee meetings, and I cannot think of another case where I disagreed more with the investigative committee's recommendations than in this case. I think the committee completely failed to understand and appreciate that this was a non-anesthesia, non-sedation dental cleaning, and Rocky was completely fine before and during the entire cleaning. It wasn't until the very end of the cleaning that he suddenly and unexpectedly arrested. Rocky was 11 years old, and I don't know if you have a necropsy report or not, but no one can say that Rocky passed away because of something Dr. Fiskett did or should have done. Without that evidence, there can be no sustainable gross negligence violation. The investigative committee premised their concerns on faulty assumptions that Rocky either had an obvious significant pre-existing medical condition or presented in such an excited state that Dr. Fisquette should have waited or not allowed the cleaning to proceed. Neither of these assumptions are correct. First, with regard to Rocky's medical history, the owner stated in his complaint, and I quote, quote unquote, Rocky was a healthy dog at 11 years old and had no past health problems and was under no medication of any type. Also, on presentation, the owner initially left the health concern section of the client information sheet completely blank. He had no concerns. And I've been advised by Dr. Fisquette that after her assistant Tracy asked the asked for more information, the owner wrote coughing when excited, heart murmur. Dr. Fisquette then did a complete physical exam and no heart murmur was detected. If she had detected a heart murmur, Dr. Fisquette would have noted that in the medical record. Instead, Dr. Fisquette noted that the physical exam for Rocky on this day was normal. In reviewing the investigative committee's recommendation, you will see that the gross negligence proposal is for proceeding with a veterinary medical procedure, again, a non-anesthetic dental cleaning, on a quote-unquote excited dog. The committee then proposed a duplicative medical incompetence violation for not allowing the dog to quote-unquote settle down. This dog, Rocky, was not excited. How do we know that? Because the owner himself on the check-in sheet wrote that Rocky coughs when excited. Dr. Fisquette did an exam before the cleaning and Rocky was not coughing. Therefore, under the owner's own definition, Rocky was not excited. It was therefore completely appropriate for Dr. Fisquette and her staff to go forward with the cleaning. Again, this was not an anesthetic or sedation procedure. No drugs whatsoever were administered. In Dr. Fisquette's practice, if a dog appears stressed or uncomfortable, the procedure is aborted and the dog is released back to the owner. According to Dr. Fisquette, these non-anesthetic cleanings are less stressful and less dangerous in terms of medical risk than a nail trim. Again, there was nothing unusual about this dental cleaning up to the point where Rocky suddenly arrested. He was handled in the exact same manner as every one of the 1,000 dental cleaning patients are handled. After the physical exam is performed, the dog is leash walked to a dental technician. The technician then introduces herself to the dog and he is gently wrapped in a towel. The towel wrapping serves to reduce anxiety and prevents the dog from pawing at his face and hurting himself. The sterile cleaning instruments are then introduced to the dog, who is allowed to sniff them before the cleaning is started. Acceptance of gentle manipulation of the lips and mouth indicates canine compliance, and that's what happened in this case. If the dog becomes stressed or significantly resistant during the cleaning, the procedure is stopped and the dog is returned to the owner. That didn't happen in this case because Rocky was completely fine during the procedure, was not stressed, was not resistant. In fact, the medical record which you have before you specifically states, quote unquote, dog was not stressed or reactive during the dental. While the outcome for Rocky was tragic, he didn't arrest because of something Dr. Fisquette did or should have done. His physical exam findings and clinical presentation did not even suggest contraindications for a non-anesthetic dental cleaning. Also, it should be noted that these non-anesthetic dental cleanings are routinely sought by clients with older dogs with mild cardiac issues who want to avoid the risk associated with anesthetic dental procedures. Dr. Fisquette is a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania with over 40 years of experience and has never had her license disciplined in any way. She certainly does not deserve to have her license disciplined now, in this case, given the fact that there was no statutory violation or regulation that was violated, this complaint should be dismissed with no violation. Thank you.
Thank you. We have the complainant, Zaid Callow, and your son. If you both want to speak, you can come forward. Please introduce yourselves for the record.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Zeke Kabul, the owner of Rocky. This is my son, Joseph.
Okay. Thank you. I can give you up to 5 minutes to speak.
Yeah. You know, owning a dog is like the most joyful life, joyful in the human being life, you know? And it's like adding a new family member. And and it's too, it's painful when you lose that family member for all of us. So especially when that loss of family member, it happens suddenly without, you know, suddenly due to unprofessional and careless practice from a pro, a doctor slash a vet. And which I don't wish that to happen to my worst enemy, you know. And without even saying goodbye and rest in peace to Rocky. So it would be nice for Dr. Fesket at that day, September 5th, 2022, when we reported in the application, when we first walk in, that Rocky has a heart murmur history and he cough. It would be nice to be more cautious. And when she checked, supposed to be a physical exam, which is we don't have any proof or any video or any footage, because they hide it to us, the doggy district, those people over here. They hide it to us. They don't want to give us no information. And as well as Dr. Fisket and Tracy Johnson, her technician, whatever she is, I don't know. She hide it to us. And whatever the sir, he said, we don't have no proof. I mean, everybody can say anything, correct? So anyways, Dr. Fisket, it would be nice from her to walk outside, since she saw her heartbeat was over here in the record, it was 220. So we asked his vet and some other resources of vet, and all of them, they agree with Rocky's size and his age is supposed to be about 120 to 150 maximum. So why, it would be nice if she just walk outside and inform us, you know, we're all was there, my wife and my other son, just to tell us, hey, this procedure is gonna be at risk. So I don't recommend to move on with the cleaning, but, you know. So it would be nice. And we don't mind, I don't mind paying the full amount of the cleaning for her time, for checking Rocky. But unfortunately, she didn't. Instead, she was careless and did not communicate with us in the proper professional manner and whatsoever, which caused the death of our poor dog, Rocky. All my family went through a hard time, especially my son, Joseph, had a surgery in July, major surgery for a tumor he had in his hip. And also my other son has an asthma. He's homeschooling, online schooling. And Rocky, he was like a therapy dog for all of us. So, and we didn't expect to take him to, yeah, like to a place that's his end, you know, because that's, you know, unprofessional, and I don't know what else I can say. Anyways, which is I told you guys, I don't wish that to happen to my worst enemy. This is a tragedy. And I appreciate really the time you guys taking to hear my story and listening to us. And I'm very confident that you will make the fair judgment in this sad tragedy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're sorry for the loss of Ross. Thank you.
And my son, maybe have something to add.
Sure,
to
go it, ahead.
If possible.
Yep. State your name for the record again.
Joseph.
Okay.
Hello. And you know, losing a dog, one of the hardest things that can happen to you. So unexpected death, taking him to non-anesthesia. You would think it's safe. They say it's safe. So you have full confidence he's going to be safe the whole time. And, you know, like my dad stated, we took him there on the 5th. They said, you know, took a physical, everything's fine. So if your physical is complete and fine, that means he's good to go in the procedure, right? But then, you know, the medical record says that it has a 220 heartbeat. So that kind of causes suspicion to you that maybe he wasn't, you know, good to receive treatment. So then after that, she comes out to us and she's like, oh, your dog passed away. And then, you know, we try to see why, what happened, and they keep saying, I don't know, I don't know. And then, you know, she said she did CPR, but, you know, I mean, there's no proof that she did CPR, you know what I mean? And, you know, maybe she could have tried harder, maybe she could have put more effort into it, because, you know, they say that CPR is not guaranteed, but, you know, it can save lives. Kind of like the NFL player everybody knows about. Mm-hmm. You know, he passed on the field, gave him CPR, he's alive right now. So take that moment. If they didn't give him CPR, he'd be dead right now. So, you know, and then she comes out to us, your dog's passed away and all that. And then, you know, like, we don't know what to do because it's like all of a sudden moment. And then she's like, oh, you can take him to the hospital down the street. So that was closed. And then we have to drive all the way to VetMed, which was like 30 minutes away. And then, you know, obviously at that time, it's, you know, he's dead, it's over. And I mean, we didn't really know what to do with him. Like, I don't really know about cremation and all that. So we just buried him in our backyard. You know, she didn't tell us what to do with him and all that. And, you know, it's just, you know, like, it's tough because, I mean, she had no medical equipment whatsoever. No, you know, oxygen tank or whatever the vet medical equipment they use. I'm not sure about that. But, I mean, maybe if she had the right equipment, maybe took more caution, you know, maybe he'd be alive right now. And, you know, it was Labor Day, too. We were her last customer. I felt like she was rude to us. My family will probably think that too. I mean, I don't have any proof, but, you know, that's our assumption, that she was rude to us, you know, Labor Day, you know, last customer, holiday, everyone's out with their family. So, you know, and then, you know, it's just hard, you know, I have medical conditions and all that. So when something like that happens to you, you know, it hurts you mentally and physically too, honestly. So, you know, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. You guys may step back unless anybody had any general questions. Or... And Dr. James, I think you guys can step back. Dr. James, you were the lead for this one as well.
Yes, I am. So, you know, this is a tough case, obviously, because of the outcome, and certainly not anything anyone would have expected. I've done a ton of work in my career around grooming salons, and they have this happen, despite the fact that we think these dogs are stable and healthy and they're gonna make it through a procedure, anesthesia-free, there's risks associated with them. And dogs get stressed and things like this happen. I think in this case, though, my biggest concerns are around some of the communication and what was even communicated about what the dental was gonna do, what was the benefit of the dental, what were the side effects, what were some of the risks. So I feel like I don't have enough off of this right now to certainly move forward with the findings of the investigative committee, but have more questions than I could answer here. So I'm gonna make a motion that in the case of 2327, we move it to an informal.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to move this case to an informal. All those in favor, or if there's any further discussion?
I have one question, Madam Chair. Of the DVMs on the board, is what is the max heart rate from generally for a dog that age, that breed? What's the top end healthy, I guess I'd say? What's the max? Is 220 exceptionally high? Is it a risk factor?
I would say it's a risk factor. I don't think you can say there's a top end, right? Okay. I feel like it's... Right.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it could be appropriate for that situation, but depending on that heart rate, you may or may not proceed with something. So depending on what's going on, but 220 in and of itself is not necessarily bad. If it's 220 for a long time, that could
except
be...
that we have evidence that the dog was not stressed.
Yeah.
So not stressed at 220, mm-hmm. I have concerns.
Yeah, so it's a multifactorial
which
thing.
Which is something,
yeah.
The questions we have.
Thank you.
Okay, so a motion and a second to move to informal. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Case 2327, we'll move to an informal.